Good afternoon. 9 months ago, here in New York, the UN Secretary-General gave President Johnson Sirleaf, President Yudhoyono, and me a challenge, and that was to define the world's response to development and poverty for the next generation. This meeting has been the culmination of that process, and it's been great to see a new consensus emerging from this diverse group about the vital principles that we need. We met in London in November and agreed to keep a relentless focus on extreme poverty. In Liberia in February, we agreed that economic transformation, enterprise, business, entrepreneurship must be at the heart of our agenda. And in Bali last month, the group met and to move beyond the traditional aid relationship to a new global partnership so that development is genuinely shared by not just governments, but also businesses and civil society. Now, back in New York, we've brought all this together in what I believe will be a very powerful report for the world to respond to. First, we've absolutely nailed our colours to the mast with one clear, overarching aim: to end extreme poverty in our world. Over 1 billion people still live on less than $1.25 a day. Getting to the point where no one at all is that poor is no longer a pipe dream. It can and should be one of the great achievements of our time. It is doable. And it means that by 2030, everyone will have what we in Britain already consider our birthright: drinking water, electricity, healthcare, and a place at school. Second, we want to build on the historic work done under the current Millennium Development Goals. But we also agreed that they weren't perfect. There wasn't enough focus on the devastating effect of conflict, of violence. They overlooked the importance of strong institutions, accountable government, the rule of law. So we've agreed on this panel that there must be a transformational shift in the way that we do things. Rich countries meeting their aid commitments is important, but it will not be enough on its own. And our report will make clear that we need to tackle the causes of poverty, not just the symptoms. Above all, we need a focus on economic growth, driven by a strong private sector as the most powerful engine there is to lift people out of poverty. We need a recognition that development has to be sustainable for the planet for the long term. But there's this new commitment to strong institutions and governance, because these are essential to end conflict, to protect the rule of law, to stamp out corruption and insecurity, and to hold governments accountable. This, I believe, is a totally new addition to the Millennium Development Goals: the importance of good governments, lack of corruption, what I call the golden thread of development. And finally, we agreed that our report must be clear, it must be compelling, it must be accessible, so people around the world, including thousands who've contributed their views, can debate it, can implement it, and can demand action from us all. So we'll be finalising clear and challenging goals, and we'll be setting out illustrative examples of the goals we should believe should be there, and what should succeed the Millennium Development Goals after 2015. And as I've said, it is a real breakthrough that agreement is emerging to include goals that go to the heart of this golden thread that links open economies and open societies: fair and accountable institutions, equal economic and political opportunities for women, open and fair rules to boost enterprise and growth. I believe this clarity will be a real achievement, which will help the panel's ideas stand the test of time in the years ahead. It's been a huge privilege to lead this work with Presidents Johnson Sirleaf and President Yudhoyono, and I look forward to standing shoulder to shoulder with them as we campaign for our ideas in the weeks and the months to come. Thank you very much. I've got time for a couple of questions. I think there's a UN Reuters question first.
On behalf of the UN Correspondents Association, we appreciate you taking time to speak to us. I want to shift to another topic that's being discussed at the UN today: Syria. There is a proposal out there that is being floated that the European Union could consider arming the rebels, but withhold implementation of such a decision to use it as leverage. Would this be something that Britain could support? And on the question of a Geneva II conference, there's a great deal of skepticism about whether it's going to be possible at this stage of the conflict there to get a diplomatic solution. Do you share this skepticism? Thank you.
Well, first of all, on the EU arms embargo, we haven't made a decision to arm the rebels, but what we have done is amend that EU arms embargo so that we can give the opposition forces technical assistance, we can help to shape them and work with them. And I think that is important, because if we don't engage with the opposition, and let's be clear, the opposition has said it wants a free and democratic and pluralist Syria that protects the rights of minorities, if we don't engage with the opposition, then we shouldn't be surprised if extremist elements in that opposition grow. That's not what we want, and so we should be engaging, and that's the debate that will take place in Europe. As for a peace conference and a peace process, I fully support that. That is why I flew to see President Putin in Sochi last week, and I know the Secretary General will be doing the same thing. I think what is important here is to make sure that we really put pressure on the participants to bring forward the necessary names for a transitional government and that we start proper, detailed negotiations. And my concern is that we'll get into too long a process. Urgent action needs to be taken right now to put pressure on the participants to get together, to agree a transitional government that everyone in Syria can get behind. That is what needs to happen, and that's what I'll be putting my efforts behind. BBC.
James Landau, BBC. Prime Minister, what does tonight's vote tell us about your leadership when so many Tory MPs do not appear to trust you to deliver on a referendum? Is Nadine Dorries now so powerful that she can promise to stand on a joint Tory-UKIP platform at the next election and get away with it? And thirdly, why should income inequality not be a development goal?
Okay. On the first issue, the votes tonight in the House of Commons, what the votes tonight will show, and the votes will show very clearly, is the strong support there is for a really excellent Queen's Speech and governmental programme, a programme that cuts the deficit, that reforms welfare, reforms education, that makes our economy more competitive, that makes sure Britain wins in the global race. That is actually what the Queen's Speech is all about. As for the vote on the amendment, I've said very clearly it's a vote that government ministers should abstain on, and for other Conservative MPs, it is a free vote. And it's a free vote, and as I've said, I'm very relaxed about that, so I don't think people can read in anything, really, to the scale of that free vote, not least because only the Conservative Party has a very clear position and a very clear policy about what needs to happen in Europe. We need reform in Europe. We need a renegotiation in Europe. And then we need a referendum in the United Kingdom on an in-out basis. And that is a policy that is supported right across the Conservative Party, right across the country. And it's that substance that people should focus on rather than on issues of process. On your second question, the Conservative Party doesn't do pacts and deals. We are set to win the election outright. That is the aim, and that is what we will deliver. And on the third question, what I think you'll see when this report comes out is that we want to make a more equal and fair world. We want to have equality of opportunity right throughout the goals that we set, whether it's about healthcare, whether it's about education. And I think that is the most important form of equality that we need in our world, that frankly no one is left behind. Everyone is given the chance to live a life out of poverty and make the most of their talents and their opportunities. And it's that equality of opportunity that I think you'll see flow through this very, very strong report. Thank you very much indeed.